Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
This episode of the Gegenpressing Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. It's down to the last four teams. BetOnline has been your tournament bracket headquarters all March long, and now that we are almost down to the finals, we've still got a lot more in store. MLB is here, and NBA, NHL playoffs are around the corner. As always, BetOnline is the number one source for your summer sports wagering. Head to BetOnline today and stay updated on all the action, and remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that is B-L-E-A-V, BELIEVE, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. Hello and welcome to Gegenpressing, the Bundesliga podcast. This is the coronation show, or almost coronation show. I'm Manu Feit, he's Stefan Bienkowski, and Matt Ford is on the show as well. Guys, Stefan, how's it going? How's your weekend been? I've heard you've been hiking all of the Scottish Highlands and can barely move today.
Something like that. Not all the Highlands, fortunately. But yeah, my legs are very sore. Feel very sorry for myself. So, but I'm sure I'll be fine for this podcast, so that I can just kind of collapse into a heap.
Thankfully, we can sit for this. I have this vision of you in like one of those Scottish rocks marching through the Highlands, trying to avoid getting, what was the stuff that can sting your legs and that's why you have the long socks? There's a name for it.
Thistles, I guess, historically, yeah.
Ah, hilarious. Anyways, that's the vision I'm going to carry for the rest of the podcast. Thankfully, we have a Northern Scottish person on the show as well, and Matt Ford. Matt, I'm pretty sure you're not, haven't hiked the Highlands with a Scottish rock the last few days.
I've not, and to my eternal shame, in my 33 and a half years on this planet, I've still never been to Scotland.
What?
It is shameful, because my beloved grandmother, who for several years now has no longer been with us, was from Glasgow.
Oh, wow.
Very proud Scot, which makes me, what, a quarter Scottish?
It does indeed.
And I've never been, so yeah, this needs correcting. I might correct it this summer, because I think United are playing a friendly in Edinburgh, so I might have to make my way up there.
Always welcome. Always welcome.
We might have to record like a Gegenpressing special from Scotland.
Yeah, me and Stefan will go to the pub and do it from there.
Yeah, sure. I have to say, it's an amazing place, so I'm surprised you haven't been mad, and you need to catch up on it.
I do. I will. I promise.
Just on the topic of a Man United fan going to Scotland, I actually think there definitely used to be, I think there still is, a bus that leaves from George Square in Glasgow every Saturday to Old Trafford, because I think there's a Manchester United fan club that obviously drive down every weekend to go to the home games at Old Trafford. So
absolutely. I've come across quite a few Scottish United fans down the years. Absolutely.
Yeah, so maybe after the next Man United game, you just hop on the bus with them back up to Glasgow and you'll be fine.
Yeah, I've got those buses as far as Newcastle before, and that was far enough.
Yikes. Good thing this is a Bundesliga podcast.
Exactly.
I don't even know how to make the transition from here to that.
I hiked all the way to Berlin for the weekend. There you go. There's your transition.
Yeah, okay, well, there's a great transition, because we're not going to linger on them too much, because I'm pretty sure we're going to talk about them all next week when they do get their final coronation. Matt, how was Berlin? Leverkusen, I'm pretty good. Much there now.
Yeah, good. It's gonna, yeah, it just seems like the coronation is gonna happen sooner than we thought. I remember thinking rather selfishly when I was sat at the Stadion under Alten Försterei that, the Bayern game, yeah, well, I thought it'd be about, I've got about 3 weeks now until Leverkusen actually sealed the deal, Next thing you know, Heidenheim score two goals in the minute, and I'm thinking, oh God, a draw, that means I've probably only got about 2 weeks now until Leverkusen can confirm it. And then Tim Kleindienst scored the winner, and I thought, great, as it stands, I've got 4 days to finish what I had planned. So it's led to a really, really, really busy week now between today and next Sunday. I'm completely swamped.
Well, you can always cheer for Werder Bremen next week. They give you an extra week.
That's exactly what I'll be doing. I'll be turning up to the to the Bayer Arena wearing green and white, and in my best Northern German accent, and cheering on Werder.
I mean, Stefan, at this point, even if Werder Bremen pull it off next week, it seems like it's unlikely it's going to stop anything in that regard.
Yeah, unlikely, but we can hope.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you said, we were discussing what to talk about on the show this week, and we kind of came. I'm almost out of things to say about Leverkusen, because it's great that they're winning and they're also going to make history and they'll have their day in the sun probably next weekend. But it's got to the point. It's almost like a Bayern title run, in a sense that it's been so unstoppable and so consistent that by the time you get to like mid-April, you're just kind of bored of it. Not that to say that I'm bored of Leverkusen, going to win a title, but from the week to week, there's very little to add. Whereas Bayern and Dortmund continue to, I keep thinking of that Simpsons clip where Sideshow Bob keeps stepping on the rakes and they keep slapping him in the face, and you just can't pull your face, you can't pull your eyes away from it. So unfortunately, we have to keep talking about them.
Which one of the two do you guys want to talk first? Because we have plenty. Do you guys want to start with Bayern? Let's start with Bayern. It seems like the right place to go from
go,
here.
Go alphabetically.
Since you've already... alphabetically, okay. Yes, Bayern is before Dortmund. I am a little lost for words. I had the Goal Arena on Saturday to watch all the different games at once, because I didn't think there would be much interesting happening, and of course an eye on Leverkusen Bayern at the same time, and then Bayern with the latest slapstick in that second half. It really is kind of unbelievable what is happening at this stage. You read the reactions post-game, whether it's from Max Eberl, the players, Thomas Tuchel. Stefan, I'm going to go straight back to you. I feel like we've gotten to a point now where it seems almost unfeasible to continue with Thomas Tuchel. Yet at the same time, it almost seems like they're without a choice at this stage, because of the way that they decided to continue until the end of the season, right, and set themselves up for that scenario. It's almost like, I'm trying to find the right analogy here, it's like an unescapable situation for them, in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, I would actually suggest that with every passing week, the anger towards Tuchel actually dissipates and the anger towards the squad increases. I kind of said after the game that on social media that the only question left to answer Bayern before the end of the season is how many of these players leave the club as well alongside Tuchel, because I thought it was really interesting that the two main culprits in my opinion for this game were Kim and Upamecano. I thought you could actually look at just about every goal that Heidenheim scored, and one of them is just pulled wildly out of position in one form or another. And, they look like two players who had no idea what they're doing, two players who look like they haven't played any football all season, which obviously isn't the case. But, it was almost like actually a kind of, in a weird perverse way, it actually almost backed up Tuchel in a sense, because obviously since this decision that wasn't made or announced that he was leaving, one of the big things Tuchel did was he said, well, if I'm leaving anyway, I'm going to play the team that I want to play. And that's when he went with Eric Dier and De Ligt as a centre-back pairing, is what we'll probably expect to see against Arsenal this week. And through what I can only imagine was simple squad rotation this weekend, he decides to bring Upamecano and came back, and they very quickly underline why he dropped him in the first place. You know, so you know, we were talking to a lot of Bayern fans in our subscriber chat throughout the game, and you know, a lot of them are fed up, a lot of them are angry, a lot of them frustrated. But I suspect that after that kind of performance and the way that team completely capitulated, I can understand if Tuchel just kind of throws his arms up in there and says, well, you know, this is exactly what I have to work with here. You know, I have to work with these two central defenders who are, you know, seem to be out-competing each other for causing as many mistakes as they can throughout the game. A disinterested Alphonso Davies on the left, subpar Joshua Kimmich on the right, Konrad Leimer, and in particular Leon Goretzka, who continues to just look completely lost, and still relying on Thomas Müller despite his aging years, you know. So I don't know. It was just another game in which Bayern just kind of underlined the fact that if they really, really want to get back to the top of European football next season, they're probably going to have to sell 8, 9, 10 players this summer.
No, yeah, 100%. I think so too. I think one observation that I might want to add to this is that Bayern Munich were on a really good run before the international break. And then something happened during the international break, and I think it's Alexander Pavlovich going out with that throat infection, right? Tendonitis, I think it is. And that tells you quite a lot about where Bayern Munich are at the moment, that a 19-year-old midfielder has literally held this team together in that run before the international break. And the moment you take him out of the squad, how much worse they are without him. And that is actually kind of mind-boggling in my mind. It's great for Pavlovich. It adds to the how great of a story he has been and how great of a find he will be, because I'm pretty sure we can all agree of the 10 players that we envisioned should be sold by Bayern Munich, he's probably not one of them. In fact, he's probably one of your long-term future projects that you want to build this team around, Musiala being maybe the other one. But it's kind of really telling that this is essentially being all held together by two teenagers. I'm still calling Musiala a teenager, but, you know, he's no longer. But that is where they are at the moment, and that's kind of crazy. But, you know, Matt, maybe to bring you in as well, we have to also mention Heidenheim here, because 2-0 down after 45 minutes, and then Frank Schmidt goes into the dressing room, gives, from what has been told, a speech of his lifetime, right? Basically not blaming the players, but also himself, and changing his selection and what they have done in the second half to turn this game around. We often talk when it comes to Bayern Munich about them losing and throwing it away, but we also need to outline how good Heidenheim have been, and this isn't the first time that they've done it.
Yeah, I thought the contrast was really interesting, and there's a proper, not just end of season or end of managerial term, but a complete end of era sort of attitude and atmosphere surrounded by Munich at the moment. Whereas contrastly, you've got Frank Schmidt in Heidenheim going into the 17th, 18th year, or even longer of his era, and yet clearly still as absolutely demanding of his players and himself, and just cutting edge in terms of his attitude. As he's ever been. You know, I think Heidenheim at this stage of the season, they're very, very unlikely now to get dragged into that relegation battle. You could maybe forgive them for taking the foot off the gas slightly, particularly going, you know, 2-0 down at home to Bayern in what's probably the biggest game of their season. When they looked at the fixture list at the start of the year, you know, the first time having Bayern Munich visiting in the Bundesliga in that stadium. And then, you know, you go 2-0 down and you can forgive them for thinking, well, we're having our celebratory day out, this is what happens, fair enough. But no, as you said, by all accounts, Frank pulled off a quite heated and quite angry address in the dressing room at half-time, switched to a diamond, two up front, which Thomas Tuchel interestingly said that he saw coming and that he prepared his own team for. Apparently they discussed this before the game and said that if things aren't going well for Heidenheim, they're likely to switch to a diamond. And then they mentioned it again at halftime. This is likely to happen. And then it's almost like Tuchel saying that and emphasising the fact that he told his players that in order to give the impression that, well, yeah, I'm not to blame. I told them what to expect. And they've gone out and done absolutely nothing about it. So I think it's just sort of undermined once again the this weird sense of apathy and detachment which has taken hold of Bayern and, like I said, made all the more noticeable by the contrasting attitude in the home dressing room.
Yeah, that is, you know, that is what we would say classic in German, doesn't reach the team anymore, right? Or, you know, to use a North American term, has lost the dressing room. I think that is what's classic happening here, which is why I think it's so baffling in so many ways that Bayern Munich insists on keeping going with Tuchel when it's clearly not working anymore.
I think it's because there's literally effectively two games left that matter at all now to Bayern.
Well, you say that, but they could drop out of the Champions League, Matt.
That's true. Yeah, they need to keep looking behind them. That's true.
Can I just add one final thing?
I can't
quite
see you going that bad.
Can I just add one final thing before we maybe move on? Just unless you obviously still had a few more points to make, Manu, but I actually did a quick piece for Transfermarkt on Bayern ahead of the Arsenal game just for British readers who are obviously, particularly Arsenal fans who are perhaps wondering what to expect. And I mean, just to kind of maybe pull away from Tuchel for a minute, because, you know, it's been well categorised what he's done right, what he's done wrong, what he said in the press and who he's annoyed and things like that. But can I look at this Bayern squad over the years? One thing that really stood out to me when I looked at the numbers was that when they won the Champions League under Hansi Flick, they had the youngest average age in the Bundesliga. This season, they've got the third highest average age. And it's basically been gradually increasing since 2020. It's gone up from 23.7 to 26.7. And something I found quite startling as well, when you think about it, is that of the starting 11 that played in that Champions League final in 2021, seven of them are still regular players for Bayern. And, you know, of course, you know, 3 years isn't a huge amount of time in the grand scheme of things, but it's actually quite a long time in football, especially if at that point you've already won everything there is to win. And I just find it quite startling that I guess this is what happens when you have the ultimate success, that, you know, it's always very hard to draw a line under it and say, well, now we have to rebuild and have to restart with new players. But it seems clear to me that that team is just full of players who won everything, who are just really not on a personal level, they don't do it on purpose or anything, but they just don't have that same hunger that they used to have. And, you know, it's not to say that Joshua Kimmich or Goretzka or Serge Gnabry or Kingsley Coman or Alphonso Davies can't go on and have success elsewhere. I think they absolutely can. But I think it's a bit naive of Bayern to think that this same group of players was always going to have that same hunger year after year after year.
Yeah, I think that's spot on, Stefan. You know, and that, you know my opinion about Thomas Tuchel. I've been quite open about it from, I think, the moment when Bayern Munich announced that they were going to move on from him. I wrote an article for the Substack where I basically said this isn't Thomas Tuchel's fault, that this is the squad's fault, right? And I think that is 100% accurate, you know, but at the same time, it seems like these players aren't listening to him anymore, because one of the... This is the classic shoot the messenger, right? Because Thomas Tuchel said a while ago that they need to completely rebuild the squad. And the players obviously don't agree with him, even though I think he's quite right. I actually would go as far that Bayern Munich they're not going to do this, obviously, but I think they're at the point now where maybe they need to fire the team and not the coach. So what I mean by that is sell the 10 guys and actually keep Thomas Tuchel, because I do think he might actually be the best coach available, because, you know, when you read between the lines of what's going on, the next candidate is now off the list because Rudi Völler extended his contract today with the DFB, And Eberl has basically admitted that it now looks like Nagelsmann is going to stay national team coach beyond Euro 2024, with the asterisks on that statement that it depends what happens at the tournament, right? But that, I think, is really quite fascinating because it really only leaves 1.5 candidates, and that's the Serbian Rangnick, right? So the best available coach at the moment is actually the one that they're firing, which then, you know, if they would do things right. Remember when Klopp left Dortmund and he basically said, like, it was either me or the team, and it probably should have been the team at the time? I think that's what's happening here too. And that's great news for the Bundesliga, maybe, because it means that the league is going to be far more competitive, because I think Eber now will have to search for a new team and a new head coach for next summer, because I think there you have to tear it down. Matt, what's the classic line from Alex Ferguson, that you have to break down a team when they're...
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Best. This episode of the Gegenpressing Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. It's down to the last four teams. BetOnline has been your tournament bracket headquarters all March long, and now that we are almost down to the finals, we've still got a lot more in store. MLB is here, and NBA, NHL playoffs are around the corner. As always, BetOnline is the number one source for your summer sports wagering. Head to BetOnline today and stay updated on all the action, and remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that is B-L-E-A-V, BELIEVE, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here.
Not sure if it was a line, but yeah, certainly a modus operandi. I think it's in hindsight, perhaps a weird decision to have made to have cut the cord with Tuchel. Sorry, before Max Eberl has like officially got his feet under the table and got started. So I agree. I think if Eberl was going to be looking around the market for the ideal coach that he wants to lead his rebuild at Bayern, then Thomas Tuchel would obviously be very near the top of that list anyway, and he's already in house. And the problems with the squad have been well documented. It's all a consequence of, that those title and Champions League winning teams not being refreshed adequately, made even worse by the transfer strategy pursued by Salihamidzic and Oliver Kahn, which didn't just bring in the wrong types of players, but also screwed up the wage structure to such a degree that it's completely imbalanced the squad. Order of making decisions. And I'm interested to see where they go now from here, because part of me still wouldn't put it past Thomas Tuchel to rally his troops for two individual performances against Arsenal. It still wouldn't be a massive surprise. Obviously, when they go into the two games as underdogs, and I think Arsenal clearly favours over two legs, but it wouldn't be a massive shock if Bayern pulled out two performances and they're going to be very different in
those two games, I'm sure.
Yeah, they will be. I think you'll see. I think a lot depends on Harry Kane's finishing, and I think something occurred to me watching the highlights of the Heidenheim game. I think for all the praise that Harry Kane's been getting, and obviously you have to, because what is it, 32? Is it 38 in all competitions now, or 32 in the league?
It's 32 in the league. I'm not sure about all competition. 38 maybe, 39?
I mean, obviously it's a ridiculous strike rate, but there have actually been some quite high profile misses too, if we're really picky. There was one which he sees saved against Heidenheim, I think he's with the score at 2-2.
Mm-hmm.
Which obviously would have restored Bayern's lead. I always think back to the defeat away at Bochum. When Kane sees a late header saved. And I'm pretty sure there was a header that he put over the bar against Dortmund last week, wasn't there?
Yes.
So for all Kane's heroics, and again, it doesn't change the fact that in the great scheme of things, Harry Kane is hardly to blame for Bayern's issues this season. However, little caveat that there are perhaps two or three big chances against smaller opposition, which he's missed and have cost Bayern some pretty big points. But yeah, maybe that's being overly picky.
No, but we had also had Sepp on the show, right, pointing out that he usually struggles a bit after injuries to come back. And I think we're seeing that. I think he wasn't great against Heidenheim at all. I mean, he scored, but I think you and I, everyone on the show, could have scored that goal. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's a really big question mark. And I think the big question mark for Arsenal, I do think Arsenal are clear favourites for it, but I do think also that in the context of what's going on in the Bundesliga, that's a very different fixture. Because it's just, you just know that Bayern Munich on this team is just going to rally, right? And show a very different face. And, you know, maybe also in the back of the head, they've just given up on the Bundesliga title, which is a dangerous place to be, because maybe my final point on this is they have to look over their shoulders. Stuttgart have now drawn even with them, right, on 60 points. And it isn't that many points, just looking at the table here real quick. Fifth place Dortmund are 7 points behind Bayern at the moment. That seems like a lot right now, but that can very quickly be not a lot, right? Maybe their only luck here is, and this is a great transition, is that Dortmund continuously shoot themselves in the foot as well. Matt, I'm going to go with you because I know you're writing something on the stadium and what was supposed to be a glorious 50-year celebration and ended up in what is probably a pretty crucial defeat for VfB Stuttgart.
I didn't see the full game, seeing the highlights of it, but it didn't seem overly spectacular. From what I could tell, actually from either team, I think you could probably, you know, lay more blame at Borussia Dortmund's door for that than VfB Stuttgart. You know, as the home team, probably expect a little bit more despite the good season that Stuttgart are having. Really good finish in the end from Serhou Guirassy. I think that was ultimately well deserved. Can't think of too many really major chances that really spring to mind that Borussia Dortmund created where you think that absolutely has to be a goal. I really can't think of one unless one of you two can think of one that occurs to you.
So the XG, surprising, was 2.13 to 1.62 in Dortmund's favour. Right. So there must have been chances, Matt.
Well, Schlotterbeck had a huge chance.
Oh, yes.
That one should be the win.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, that probably accounts for the 2.something just on its own.
Yeah, that should be an XG of 2. I know that's not how it works, but it should be an XG of 2.
But then again, even that was hardly that wasn't a chance that was created out of a well structured build up or anything like that. I came from a set piece, and obviously it has to go in, doesn't it? So, yeah, Obviously, difficult afternoon, and I think Dortmund are. We've said before they've got a really tough run in this April. Their fixture list is absolutely brutal, and as much as we said that the win in Munich was a perfect start to it, I'm about to back to square one now.
I thought this game was very interesting because I think Dortmund with their football played right in Stuttgart's hands, and Stuttgart let them play around them without Dortmund actually being dangerous. It was, in my mind, a game where you could tell that one team was very well coached and the other wasn't. And it was, you know, one of those, it was similar to the game that Stuttgart played against Leverkusen, but they couldn't do it for the full 90 minutes earlier this year, where it ended in a 1-1 draw, right? And where you could see that these are the two best teams in German football. And I think the table will soon reflect that as well. But, you know, Stuttgart, they just do what they need to do in many ways. And I think that is very, very impressive. And it showed in this game. With minimal effort, they dispatched Dortmund away on the road. And, you know, Stefan, we've seen this so many times from this team that they can basically let other teams play the football that the other teams want to play, but because their own football is so dominant and they're so self-assured on the final product, you just have the confidence that Stuttgart are somehow going to find a way.
Yeah, I mean, I do kind of want to give Dortmund some credit despite this defeat, because I actually thought for large chunks of the game, you know, they were in control. I thought they had the better chances in the first half. I don't want to say it was a smash and grab effort from Stuttgart, because I thought they did kind of play well throughout it. But, you know, they had very few chances, and it really was a Guirassy outstanding finish, which obviously got the goal. And I think he did have a second chance to make it two, but by that point, you know, Dortmund had basically thrown everyone forward, and it's basically Emre Can and Gregor Kobel the only people defending at that point. But you're absolutely right. I think it actually was a good example of what both teams can do well, what both teams struggle with, really. It was a slow game for large chunks of the match. I think that was because Dortmund are now, under Terzic, a defensive counter-attacking side at their heart. It's what they're most comfortable doing. And Stuttgart, their heart, are a very possession-based team. You know, for example, large chunks of the game, Alexander Nobel just stood there with the ball. There was absolutely no incentive for him to just lob the ball forward or to fire it out whenever he picked it up. Every time he got the ball, he stopped, dropped it, and to the point where he actually got booked for time wasting at one point, and that was clearly on purpose. You know, and I don't think he was just doing that because he's an ex-Schalke player. You know, so Stuttgart clearly have their principles, the way they play. I did an article not so long ago on how it's not too dissimilar from Leverkusen's own style of football. But it meant that both teams really lacked a kind of real attacking cutting edge. And I thought what was quite telling, and this is something that's kind of plagued Dortmund throughout the season, is that, you know, if you throw everything at Dortmund, they do have players that can counter-attack quite well. You know, we've seen, you know, Julian Brandt's a great player in transition. I think Adeyemi's a great player in transition. I think Sancho's developing back into that great player in transition. And obviously Ryerson and Matson just love bombing forward. But If you're quite happy to stand off this Dortmund side, if you're quite happy to do a bit of defending yourself or to really slow the pace of the game down, Dortmund almost just kind of trip over their own feet. They're not a great team at kind of picking through the gaps in a side, like Leverkusen are, for example. And I think that probably explains why they had so much possession in this game. They had so much kind of the incentive in this game, but they really struggled to kind of create great chances. You know, Füllkrug was really kind of working off scraps throughout the match. And actually, I've actually wrote my newsletter on Undav for Stuttgart this season, just because, you know, it wasn't his best game by any means, but I'm always impressed with his off the ball movement. I'm always impressed with the way that him and Guirassy offer so much more than just kind of simple strikers. You know, Guirassy has the frame and the talent to be almost like a target man or a number nine, much like Füllkrug, but he could also do so much more than that. And I thought Undav as well has been, he maybe wasn't great in this game in particular, but throughout this season he's been outstanding. And I just thought that stood in really strong contrast to Füllkrug, who has been good for Dortmund, but in a very kind of specific way. And of course, Sebastian Haller and Moukoko, who both came on in this match and really struggled to actually even get into, to be perfectly honest with you. So It's not the end of the world for Dortmund, because I think they'll probably play this exact same start 11 when they play Atletico Madrid this week, and it might actually bode better for them in that game. But it does now mean that they're now, what, you know, it completely cancels out that the Clásico win. It now means a level on points with Leipzig. They've let them back in. And, you know, they're in serious risk of dropping out of the top four entirely, because they still have to play Leipzig after this really tough run-in that Matt referenced a few minutes ago.
I think that comparison between Füllkrug and Guirassy, I think that probably extends in many respects to the comparison between Dortmund and Stuttgart as teams and the way they play. In the, yeah, Borussia Dortmund can sit back, sit deep, and then, you know, provide that danger on the counter-attack. I mean, that's very much sort of tactics 101, isn't it? It's not particularly creative. Whereas I think Stuttgart, really, for what I could see, turned up to Dortmund on Saturday evening with that plan, but with the knowledge that their way of going forward was not going to be purely one-dimensional counter-attacking. You saw that in the build to the goal. It wasn't just a quick counter-attack. It was really, really well worked in terms of the passing move. Another chance that springs to mind was a good element of gegenpressing from Chris Führich on the left, when he really wins the ball well high up and then gets across can get the ball across. They have so many more options in the same way that Guirassy, like I said, provides so many more options to his game than I think Fuller Club does for Borussia Dortmund. I think Stuttgart's performance was actually so much more than a sit back, give Dortmund all and give the ball and counter attack. Yes, there were elements of that. I think it was a lot more refined and actually a lot more sophisticated than that. That shows precisely what I think the difference is between a team coached by Edin Terzic with all due respect and one coached by Sebastian Hoeneß this year.
Yeah, I almost felt like Stuttgart were quite happy to give Dortmund the ball because they knew that Dortmund wasn't going to do anything with it.
Exactly. Isn't that always the case? We've said that about Dortmund on so many occasions this season. And then you thought that obviously bringing on Haller, he's still, for obvious reasons, he's still not completely fit, not match fit, and maybe lacking in confidence. But off the bench, he had little impact. Yusuf Umbukoku still remains an impact sub at most, and often not even that. I think there were a lot of calls earlier in the season, weren't there, as to why is Mukoku not starting? What's he got to do to get a start? I think, to be perfectly honest, he needs to establish himself as a mark and an even more consistent super sub before he starts demanding a start, because I've never seen a Dortmund team start with Mukoku up front and offer much more than what they do now. So again, it's not a massive criticism on him because he's still only a kid and you forget how young he is because he's been around for so long. But yeah, it was, and particularly with Füllkrug in a bit of a dell in his form, it puts an awful lot of emphasis on Adeyemi and Sancho, who were actually okay, to give them the due. I thought they actually had two of their slightly better games. Nowhere near enough. When your best chance is falling to your centre-back in the six-yard box, it's not a great deal to write home about.
I think the Adeyemi one's quite an important point. I do agree with Matt, but it's I think this game's a perfect example of what I've been saying about Adeyemi for a while now, that he undoubtedly looks back to full fitness and he looks sharp and he looks really hungry to play for Dortmund, which I think is a great thing. But positionally, I still think he's in the completely wrong place, because you can see that throughout this match, I thought he gave Wagnermann on the right-hand side for Stuttgart a horrid time for the most part. And by the end of the game, Wagnermann was performing all sorts of, ridiculous play acting to, waste time and to slow the game down. And he was basically dragging, he was really pulling at Adeyemi sharp for much of the match. Same as Stiller, actually, who got dragged over to help. So, Adeyemi looked like his old self. But the issue I have with how Terzic uses Adeyemi is that he's a very good player at getting past a player, and then, he then looks to do something with it. And if he's in the box, he scores a goal. And that's exactly what he did in Austria. You could skip by a player, fire a shot, score a goal. But for Dortmund, Terzic plays him out on the sideline, which means he beats a man like Wagnermann, and then he's basically tasked with swinging in, a David Beckham-esque cross to Füllkrug at the back post. And I just don't think he's that type of player. He's not a player to me who should be swinging in crosses from 30 yards away. He's a player who should be 10 yards in front of the goal trying to hit a ball into the back of the net. And I felt this game was a good example of the limitations you have with Adeyemi when you play him out wide like that, because even when he's fit, even when he's sharp, and even when he's running past his marker, there's only so much he can do as a winger.
I think he played more as a central role for Salzburg before he came back to Germany, right? Obviously, for 1 year, had Haaland in front of him, that helps. it's a very good point, though, that we have to make here about the Dortmund team in general, that I feel that with a lot of players are not used correctly. And then, of course, they put in Füllkrug into this mix, another center, a typical number nine, who's a bit more like Sebastian Haller, who they already had in the squad, right? And maybe Dortmund didn't think Haller was going to be able to perform this year, which turned out to be true. But listening to you too makes me think, whether it's Mukoko, Adeyemi, or Bino Gittens is another one, right? Why are these players not improving under these circumstances? And the other thing is too that I find is quite interesting, that this Dortmund team seems to be only performing well when for big occasions, like the Bayern game, right? That's why I was so optimistic that they would actually show up and get something from it. And I'm actually quite optimistic about the Champions League fixture as well, because this is the games where this team, where this team gets stuff done. But they just don't seem to be able or capable to get it done during the day-to-day business, which is the Bundesliga. And that is a criticism of that we have of both of these teams, the two big teams in German football at the moment, right? Because you could say the same thing about Bayern Munich and so to some extent. And I find it really interesting because, like, the way you fix this Dortmund team, I think it's going to be quite complicated in a lot of ways. They're changing the structure in the club. I think Matthias Sammer is taking a bigger role and Hans-Joachim Watzke is going to step down a little bit, right? And Sebastian Kehl is taking over to a larger extent. And Sven Mislintat now looks like to return as sporting director and all that sort of stuff. But these people will have a lot of work ahead of them to fix all of this. And I'm not even sure where you start, because it isn't like Dortmund. If Dortmund missed the Champions League, how would you even fix this team?
Yeah, the only conclusion you can draw is that they're probably rubbing their hands together with delight in Leverkusen. They've nailed down the manager at the moment for another year. They're not going to lose any of the players, and the biggest three rivals are facing either complete root and branch restarts and restructuring processes in the case of Dortmund and Bayern, or even in the case of Stuttgart. I mean, they're doing okay on the pitch for the time being and not getting distracted by other politics going on behind the scenes. But we've seen enough times down the years at Stuttgart that has the potential to blow up. And you know, I hope it doesn't affect them on the pitch, because they're great to watch, and all that wouldn't be fair on the work that Sebastian Hoeneß is doing. But yeah, actually, if you're Bayer Leverkusen and Xavi Alonso, you must be thinking, well, yeah, it's an absolutely no-brainer that Alonso has stayed, because they're going to be massive favourites for the title next year at this rate as well.
Yeah, congrats, Bundesliga champion 2025, Bayer Leverkusen.
Yeah, we sat here in 10 years' time lamenting why we've had an entire decade of Leverkusen dominance, and when are Bayern Munich finally going to win it?
Can I just add something that I think it's maybe a kind of pessimistic view of things, but hadn't Leverkusen and Stuttgart not really stepped up this season, we'd probably be looking at league table right now. They would have Bayern sitting on 60 points, and then Leipzig and Dortmund behind them in second and third place, 7 points behind. And we'd all be lamenting the fact that Bayern have been useless, but Dortmund have once again somehow managed to be even worse. And, you know, I think, you know, it, in a way, like, the Leverkusen and Stuttgart success stories are amazing, but they've actually almost in a way kind of covered up the way that how poor, I mean, Dortmund and you know, Leipzig are a different story. I'm sure we can talk about them at one point down the line, but, you know, everyone's been so impressed with Leverkusen and Stuttgart, we forgot the fact that Dortmund are still 7 points behind a Bayern team that have completely imploded this season, and to the point where it feels like the players are almost, you know, refusing to play for Tuchel. And yet, this Dortmund team are still 7 points behind them. And that's basically the story of the last 10 seasons in the Bundesliga, really. The fact that Dortmund always somehow find a way to be worse than Bayern, no matter what.
It's just frustrating that both clubs have almost needed 6 or 7 months extra to decide that it's clearly not working. Obviously, in Bayern, you know that it's the winning the title on the final day in the final minutes has obviously done that for them. It's acted as a little bit of a sticking plaster for them. Conversely, Dortmund getting so close to the title has had the same effect. Whereas ultimately, if we're being honest, both of them should have been starting these rebuilds, which they've started in the past couple of months with the personnel changes. Both of those rebuilding structural processes should have been started, I think, way before the end of last season, clearly. So the fact that both of them managed to end the year either scraping the title or coming so close to the title, we sort of convince people, oh no, actually things are actually all okay, things aren't quite that bad. Thomas Tuchel can get the most out of this team. There's loads of potential. Or Edin Terzic, there's loads of potential there because he got so close that we're on the right track. Ultimately, neither are really true. And it's probably it's needed a Leverkusen or a Stuttgart to punish them for that. And I think it's logical that's happening. Fair play to those two. Nothing against Bayern Munich, but I really hope Stuttgart finish second. But that would be fantastic.
Yeah. I hope so too, because it would set a really good signal for the league.
Bayern this season have done absolutely nothing to deserve coming second. It would just paper over more cracks, arguably. So have they still got to play each other, Bayern Stuttgart?
Yep. I'm actually at that game.
There we go.
And I'm very excited to see Stuttgart dethrone Bayern from second place.
could be a good one. The return of the Zuid Klassiker.
Yeah. No, I actually think that's going to be a really good game. And, you know, good for Stuttgart and good for Leverkusen for doing things a little different. And I hope Stuttgart sort out their backroom stuff. Although, knowing how things are in Stuttgart, friction has always been a part of that club's history, Matt, going all the way back to the 90s. Sometimes it leads to good things, sometimes it leads to bad things. Let's just hope it leads to good things this time. A club that has made a decision about the future, we need to mention that here, is VfL Bochum. They have sacked Thomas Letsch after the defeat to Köln. It's incredible that Bochum have made this relegation race interesting again, because it looked like for weeks that there wasn't any movement down there. And now we actually have a situation where from pretty much Köln, Mainz, Bochum, and maybe even Wolfsburg, if they don't turn things around quickly, could all feasibly end up on 17th, 16th or 15th place, or rather 17th or 16th, right, which is like direct relegation and relegation playoffs. Matt, how did you see the whole Bochum thing unfold? Thomas Letsch, for much of his time there, has done a good job, but things, you know, five defeats in a row, things have been really slipping there.
Yeah, it's like you said, really interesting to see how that relegation battle, which we thought to all intents and purposes was restricted to it had already been narrowed down to two teams, seeing that there was no way that anybody was either Darmstadt were going to catch up with Cologne and Mainz from behind, or that anybody else would really really fall back into that relegation swamp. And to be honest, that was looking at the case in about the 90th minute, wasn't it, on Saturday. At that point, Bochum are going 10 points clear of Cologne and 6 points clear of Mainz, and you're thinking, okay, that absolutely puts the nail in that coffin, that the relegation battle now is going to be between Mainz and Cologne. They're playing each other as well in a couple of weeks' time. And then 2 minutes later, suddenly Bochum are actually only 4 points clear of Cologne and only three clear of Mainz, and suddenly the club gets nervous. And like you said, they've got 1 point from the six games since that 3-2 win over Bayern, and that was only the second win of 2024. I think after that, immediately, it might have just been because of how the fixture plan worked on that day, but I think it sent them up to 11th. At least temporarily on that day. That's how high up the table actually put them. But I know since then, I don't know where you start look for explanations for it, but they have started to throw away leads, basically. Maybe you can understand, ultimately losing against RB, but they did take the lead against them and were ahead for a good 20, 25 minutes or so, ended up losing 4-1. They were 2-0 up against Darmstadt, drew 2-2. 1-0 up against Cologne, lose 2-1. They've played all the relegation, direct relegation rivals in recent weeks, and they haven't beaten Mainz, Darmstadt or Cologne. You can understand why suddenly people around Bochum start getting a little bit nervous, because their running is also not as straightforward on paper, at least, as, for example, Cologne's. They still got to play Union away, who I thought were really good against Leverkusen for large parts, even with 10 men. They've got to play Leverkusen, all right, league should be wrapped up by then. Bremen away, Wolfsburg away. There's some tough fixtures there still for Bochum, and clearly the feeling was that this was drifting dangerously in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I think what you mentioned there, the result against Bayern as being the last win, is really key. Another key aspect that I'm looking at right now, when you look at the goals against, they're second worst in the league with 58 goals conceded. And, you know, that sometimes says more than even the points that they're on, because it kind of shows you trend lines, doesn't it? And having only Darmstadt in that worse in that category than what you are is not a good sign. I'm just really curious, when you look at what the rumors are now, you know, one name that's been mentioned is Stefan Kunz as a potential replacement. I would love for Stefan Kunz to be back in the Bundesliga, and he has those connections to Bochum, right? He played there, and but that almost seems too small of a club for him in some ways, and he doesn't even have to have, I mean, he does have no history of relegation battles, I guess, with Kaiserslautern in the second division, where he was more of a sporting director, I think, if I remember correctly. But this would be a very different task. So I think we have to start getting worried a little bit about Bochum here. But Stefan, you know, another team in there is Wolfsburg. And so overall, when you look at all of this, this makes the relegation zone really interesting to watch. You know, the title race is pretty much wrapped up, so we have other races to watch now, and this is definitely one of them now.
Yeah, I mean, Matt made a great point explaining why Bochum maybe made that choice, and you look at the kind of run of fixtures that they had, and you can understand why they probably gave him the last kind of 3 or 4 games to kind of turn things around. They should have, you know, when you play Mainz, Darmstadt and Cologne and you only take 1 point away from it, then, you know, you're in trouble. And the interesting thing is that this Bundesliga season has been one in which teams at the bottom of the table have changed head coaches, and just about every single one of them has actually worked out really well. Obviously, Augsburg brought in Torup, which has been an insane success story. I know, I mean, although they obviously lost the weekend, but they've just shot up the table since then. Union brought in Bielica instead of Urs Fischer. That'd be quite something if Bielsa was at Union Berlin. You could make a pretty strong case that Schultz has probably done a slightly better job than Baumgart was. I thought they looked destined for relegation before he came in. And obviously Henriksen at Mainz is doing a pretty decent job since he's came in. He's actually picking up on average like an extra point per game over Seefer and Svensson's records. And then we'll have to see what happens with Hasenhüttl at Wolfsburg. He's got 1 win and 1 defeat so far, but that itself is actually better than what Niko Kovac averaged. So, you know, just about every team around Bochum this season have changed their head coach, and just about every decision to do so has worked out well for them. So you can understand that impulse. The only problem I have for Bochum is if you actually look at the remaining games, they've got Heidenheim at home, Wolfsburg away, Hoffenheim at home, Union Berlin away, Leverkusen at home, and then Werder Bremen away. And it's really hard to see where they're picking up points there. You know, on paper, obviously, Heidenheim at home is a huge game, but the manner in which Heidenheim played recently would suggest that that's not really a sure thing either. Hoffenheim at home as well, and not is another one, but, you know, Hoffenheim being quite good on the road. It's really hard, and that's where, you know, you mentioned the Stefan Kunz rumour before we started recording here, and I thought, what head coach is looking at that list of fixtures and thinking, I fancy my chances there with this Bochum team? That's my main concern for them, because I struggle to see where they think they're going to pick up the points to kind of stay in the league. And they've got a 3-point cushion, I suppose, but the way that Mainz are playing, I wouldn't be surprised if that actually begins to kind of diminish. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
There's a slight irony, I think. I'm pretty sure that Thomas Letcher was also brought in effectively just to get them away from the relegation zone a couple of years ago. And actually, you know, it was his first Bundesliga job, and by all accounts, and I don't watch a great deal of Bochum, although I do absolutely love going there. He's, by all accounts, a very popular figure around the club. about you. If you, when you listen to people or speak to people around Bochum, they always say how much he identified with the club, how accessible he was. I've heard in reports that he would, I never actually saw him there myself, but apparently he actually had a bit of a habit of coming and chatting to the press and fans before kickoff, ahead of certain games, not the games that I was at, admittedly, but apparently, yeah, he just really, he made a really solid impression around the club, and it seemed to be going really, really well. There's a bizarre little fact that I came across. I wouldn't have been able to come up with it myself, but you probably know the answer now. But who was the last team to beat Bayer Leverkusen in the Bundesliga? Yeah, Bochum went to Thomas Letts on the final day of last season. They won 3-0. So he only extended his contract in November until 2026. So much has actually been going really, really well for Bochum. And again, I think we went through the reasons why they would have got a bit cold feet here and be concerned about relegation. And obviously, no one wants to go down, and they're not in the same situation as Darmstadt, who have sort of accepted their fate all season. Nevertheless, Bochum going down as a club without having the exact financial details to hand, I suspect it wouldn't be as dangerous for them as Cologne or Mainz going down. I suspect that the squad list they have, the overheads they have, stadium size that they have, and all that sort of stuff, it's not a club which would struggle in the second division, in the way that, for example, Cologne would. Cologne, a club with their overheads and that squad, and also the transfer ban, we've said it before, they're potentially in massive trouble if they go down. Bottom, that would quite be the case. Nevertheless, that's obviously no reason to resign yourself to that fate. And as Stefan said, it's been a good season for managerial changes this year. And if it is someone like a Stefan Kuntz coming in, in the short term, it doesn't really matter. You're just hoping for that effect, aren't you? But why shouldn't Stefan Kuntz be a slightly more progressive and long term solution as well? Be a really interesting one to keep an eye on.
Did great work for the U21 German national team. Right. Not so great work in Turkey, although that can be really difficult. I want to maybe exclude that a little bit. But interestingly enough, I heard the Stefan Kuntz rumor to Bochum before Thomas Letsch was fired. So I wonder if Stefan Kuntz was available, and that's why. Sometimes a name is available and you're like, and you realize that this is the opportunity to get a certain person, and because things haven't been going well, you pull the trigger. And whether that's premature or not, I guess we'll have to see. We learned that sometimes can also backfire. Look at Bayern Munich maybe, and where they are at.
I'm not disputing that's the case, but I think these things can also be very circumstantial as well. Like I said just a few minutes ago, up until the 91st minute on Saturday, There was little reason to sack Thomas Letsch, really, because they would have been 6 points clear of the playoff spot, 10 points clear of Cologne. That pretty much wraps it up, I think, at that point. But then to allow who was it that Luka Waldschmidt manages to win a header in between? Luka Waldschmidt is not the biggest, and he's managed to win a header between the two Bochum centre-backs and place it in the back of the net, and just a minute after they've scored the first goal. It's a pretty disastrous switch-off from Bochum's perspective.
Yeah, that's football. Fine margins, right? Between you keeping your job and not. Let's see what comes next at Bochum. And whether it is going to be a Stefan Kuntz return to the Bundesliga or not. Or whether someone else will have the job and get the job to
just one quick
help.
Thing, man. Who's aware on the relegation battle? Davy Selke has now broken his foot, and that'll be operated on. He's out now for the rest of the season, which is a big blow for Cologne, despite some half decent recent results. Losing the main striker.
Yeah, I mean, that's maybe something that we definitely, the relegation battle is fascinating. And when we celebrate Leverkusen's coronation next week or the week after, something that we maybe can further switch our focus to. Unfortunately, we are out of time for today. As always, this podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. Stefan, looking forward to your piece on Dennis Undav. Matt, I think you did something on Dortmund and the 50-year celebration, so looking forward to that. And I think I'm going to do something on Alexander Pavlovich this week, so look forward to that. We'll be back with the Champions League roundups and the extra show later this week. So until then, auf Wiedersehen.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.